Welcome to the No Direction Podcast, PaizoCon 2017 seminar coverage. Remember, we con when you can't.
All right, Amanda should be back in a couple seconds. I guess we can get started in the meantime, though. So, hey, everybody, welcome to the last day of PaizoCon. Yay! This is the Making the Book of the Damned seminar, right? That's what everybody here wants to talk about? Okay, good. I'm James Jacobs. I'm the creative director for Pathfinder. And the Book of the Damned is something that I had always been wanting to do way back in the day. Myself, Wes, and Eric, of course, were all into all of the evil side of things. Demons, devils, and demons, all the fiends and everything like that. And when we think up new projects ideas, all that type of thing, what we're doing the next few months or next year or years down the line, a title called The Book of the Damned popped up, and we didn't really even know at the start what that was, other than it was a rad title. So we knew we either wanted to do something with fiends or the outer planes or something like that, and I think Wes was the one who said, well, this is our chance to not only look at like the layers of hell, but the rulers of hell. And it really started going from there into an exploration of the archfiends and Asmodeus himself. And he kind of took the lead on how that book was going to get laid out, what kind of content was in it. So it was a combination of like, here's about the rulers, here's about the things that are ruled in hell, here's about ways player characters and villains can run afoul of infernal contracts or hellfire or the river Styx or all that stuff, and then at the end there's a big bestiary, and we more or less followed that up with the next two to come down the line over the coming years. I wrote the second one about demons and added in the obedience rules, so you basically take this fiendish obedience feat, and then for worshiping these fiends you get like these extra powers and all that. And then Todd here got to write to you. We inflicted the world with his daemons for the third one. And so that was pretty much it. It was always, there's three alignments of evil, lawful, neutral, and chaotic evil. And three major categories of fiends. And so, as always seems to happen, even before Paizo, when I was working at Wizards of the Coast, it's always the devils and demons that get dealt with first, and then the neutral evil stuff kind of like trails along behind and then gets picked up like sometime later on, and then there's always like lingering critters. For Paizo, those lingering critters, there's a lot of them. There's like chitons and divs and asuras, and we keep adding new ones like Sakhil and Oni, and the idea of doing more Books of the Damned was always out there, but there was, for each one of these races, even we finished Book of the Damned 3, there was not a lot of, like, Asuras. There was maybe five Asuras, and there was only one leader of the Divs, Aramon, so we can't do an entire huge section on the leadership of the Divs. It'd be two pages long, and that's not a very meaty chapter. So I was kicking around for a while a Book of the Damned 4 idea that was basically would take all of the other fiend races and kind of compile them into another 64-page book. And I actually made a few fake paginations for the book to see like what could be in there, how much room we would need, and it was really, really tricky trying to sort out, how all this stuff would fit in and try to give it equal room for all of the races, because by that point we had added like Asuras and some other outlying races and expanded a few, like chitons and rakshasas. We expanded from just one shot creatures into entire races. Then we finally get to this year, and we were doing Starfinder, and that's the big focus of the year. Obviously everybody's had a chance to check out Starfinder, right?
Yeah.
But we also wanted to make sure that we were still doing Pathfinder stuff. So that's why we did Bestiary 7 or Bestiary 6 and Adventurer's Guide. We've got Ultimate Wilderness coming later in the year. That required a lot more of the design team, so we decided to do that one last so that they were done with their initial work on helping the Starfinder team. And that kind of left sort of a gap in the middle. And so the idea of doing a hardcover Book of the Damned basically came up. And so the hardcover Book of the Damned is coming out in September. It's all three of the other ones are effectively sold out. So that's one of the metrics by which we look at these things. The hardcover of the Book of the Damned, I would say, kind of occupies sort of the same niche as like Curse of the Crimson Throne or The Rise of the Rune Lords hardcover, in that it's not, its focus is to reprint and collate and collect and represent a lot of this information. So it takes all three of the previous books of the Damned, puts them in those hardcovers. We added another 64 pages, so the book is 288 pages long. And anything that we'd already reprinted from those first three books of the Damned, we're not going to reprint in here because, you know, it's already out there. So that means pretty much all of the demons, devils, and daemons that we've done are now in print in bestiaries. A fair amount of the information about like some of the spells and feats and stuff like that has shown up in like Ultimate Magic and elsewhere. So there's a lot more than 64 pages in the content, is what I'm saying. There's the organization of the book is still into five chapters. Chapter one is going to present all of the archdemons, our archdevils, demon lords, Aramon, the horse lords, and the queens of the night. Each one of these fiendish demigods basically gets a two-page entry. They all get art. They all get their exalted evangelist and sentinel boons so that it works well with the Intersea Gods rules. And basically a page or more. So that's like on the left-hand page. And the right-hand page is a lot of just background information and flavor text and stuff about them and their relationship with other fiends and their realm. And then the second chapter starts focusing more on the planes themselves. So we've got like a 8 to 12 page section on like Abaddon and Hell and the Abyss, exploring all of these regions in more detail than we've ever done before. And then we go on to start exploring some of the other stuff like the Chiton realms, like stuff on the Shadow Plane, and where the Sakil from. We've got this place where we're taking inspiration from Mesoamerican, Central American mythology, having Zabulba be this land of where the Sakils come from and floating in this nightmare pocket adrift in the ethereal plane. We've got smaller entries for Chiton demagogues and the Male Branch and the Infernal Dukes and all of these other categories. If it's a fiendish demigod, it now has the very least, it's got a short paragraph description, all of their worship information, and an abbreviated boon section, kind of like what we did with Nason Demon Lords in the second book of the Damned. The third chapter then focuses on all of the crunchy stuff, prestige classes. We've reprinted the rules from Pathfinder 101 for Infernal Contracts, so if you haven't seen those, that's a really robust way to deal with how contracts can give, Infernal Contracts can give you all these wonderful powers at free, basically. new spells, new magic items, a lot of new rituals using the occult rituals rules. Those are all brand new. Quantifying things like how to transform into a fiend, how to destroy the Book of the Damned, how to you know, trap souls, all of this lovely stuff. How to summon fiends, even if you can't cast spells. So if you're a fighter and you want to summon a fiend, you can use these rituals, and there's not going to be any backlash. It'll be fine.
They'll forget all about you. Yeah. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, and then the last chapter is the best, or the last actual chapter is the bestiary, and this has a section that talks about all of the demons and devils and chitons and daemons and all this stuff, what their roles are, more flavor text for them. It also enumerates, focusing on all of these fiends that appeared in hardcover bestiaries and this book. We didn't have room to go into the full, you know, everything we've ever said about everything. But it's got like tables, like for the demons, it's got a list of all of the demons, what their CRs are, and what sort of sin they're associated with. For the daemons, it's got what sort of personification of death they are associated with. For Sakil, the manifestation of what their fear is. For devils, their hierarchy and the bureaucracy of hell. And so it's interesting to finally get all of that information right out there rather than kind of hidden away as themes and symbolism in each of these descriptions. And then we close that chapter out with a new fiend for every single category of fiend. Then at the very end, we've got a pretty large section, I think 30, 32 pages of the Book of the Damned itself, like handouts from the Book of the Damned. So it's like written in script with like kind of in-world sort of description. Those of you seeing the Book of the Damned soft covers have seen that those pop up in between chapters. We got them all basically as sort of an appendix with the Apocrypha or excerpts from the Book of the Damned. And that's pretty much what the book has inside it. When I started working on it, I knew that there was a huge amount of new rules that I had to do, or a new content that I had to generate. And I was looking for someone to write all that stuff, and I was like, well, Wes and Todd and myself already worked on the first three, and that was excellent because we got one person, one vision on that thing. And so I wanted somebody to basically take over that section there, and that's where the darkness came in. So I went to Amanda and asked her if she would be willing to work on Book of the Damned and basically write the next section, and you were very...
I was excited.
Excited. turns out the initial estimate of the new content that I needed was even bigger than I thought, and so I was like, yeah, can you write... What was it? It was like 60,000 words or something.
Yeah, in like 2 months or something. Like
yeah,
that.
In 2 months, I was like, oh, well, you get to choose what you want to do. And then like, I got Isabel Lee to do a bunch of other stuff. I got you to do some new stuff. Wes wrote some new stuff. I wrote some new stuff. So, and then a couple of other sections are just other authors here and there. So it's still a pretty tight ring of authors. It's not a wide range of stuff. So that was pretty cool. So
yeah.
Who are you?
I am Amanda Hamlin-Poons. I'm development coordinator at Paizo, and yeah, I wrote about a third of the new material probably in the Book of the Damned.
Mm-hmm.
Most of it focusing on the Archdevils, Infernal Dukes, Malronk, Queens of the Night, Rakshasas, let's see, what else? Oh, new Demodand as well.
Oh, that's right. We got a CR20 Demodand.
CR20 Demodand. Yeah.
And he's gross. He's really tall.
He's really tall.
He's really squamous.
He's very squamous. He might actually be called the Squamous Demodand.
Yeah, maybe. That's pretty much what we've got going on in the Book of the Damned. So I figured, as I do for a lot of these things, unless you have anything else you wanted to talk about.
Well, so one of the really fun things for me was to write, are you all familiar with Intersea Gods and how there's that whole first page of boons and obedience and then boons for the three different prestige classes, and it's, you know, page and it comes underneath all of their worship information, their favored weapon, their unholy symbol and all of that. One of the most fun things for me was to come up with the ones for the Archdevils, because we had Asmodeus. We maybe had one Archdevil already done?
Yeah, we did, because it was...
That stuff from Mammon.
It might have been Mammon. It was one of them. We've done two of the Archdevils, Moloch and Mammon. It was Moloch we had, because he's the one we did recently.
That's right, because I remember doing Mammon.
Mammon, we did the Mammon article before we knew what a boom was. So.
Okay.
Yeah, so it was really fun to be able to look at these guys and sort of, of course, you know, I wrote the flavor text to fill a whole section, but, you know, we had that page of boons and obediences, and to look at, you know, like, what sort of benefits would they give to their worshipers, and what would their obedience be, and it was really fun because these are, you know, lawful evil devils, obviously, and so they're not going to be like your demons that's just like, oh, you know, eat the flesh of a baby once a day, and, you know, you get little saves against babies. It's more like what is that sort of subtle, evil, creepy thing? And sort of my metric for, you know, what a good boon would be is if you've got somebody in your party, a lot of times you have people who worship lawful evil deities and parties that are not necessarily all evil. They may be their own alignment step away and they, you know, worship the law side of the lawful evil deity. We see that in Pathfinder Society all the time, clerics of Asmodeus. And it's always like fun from a role-playing perspective. So my thought was, what would be weird and creepy and sort of like opaque and esoteric when all of a sudden, you know, you're at the camp and you're like breaking out the food, you know, and the watch is starting and all of a sudden you've got, you know, your cleric of Mephistopheles over there writing something in the dirt and spilling a little vial of blood in it, and oh, he's chanting, what is he doing? And so I just thought of a lot of really cool, flavorful things that I thought were cool for, you know, how you worship these and then what you end up getting in response. It was it was much more subtle and challenging and fun, I think, to come up with that side of evil and worshiping than it is, you know, the real over the top, like super evil things.
Yeah, it's definitely this book filled about evil things, and we've got like a little sidebar in the introduction. It's like, you know, everybody make sure you've got your consent of your players before you use this stuff in your game, because there's some grisly, creepy stuff, like a content warning type thing. Because it was fun for me particularly in watching, because I developed the whole thing, watching after I turned it over to the editors. Every one of the editors would come to me and was like, this is horrifying. And it was always a different thing. So it's not like there was one thing in the book that people freaked out about. It's like, this is messed up. And it's never something that we really had to... there was a fair amount of like kind of massaging language to make sure that... I've always thought that in role-playing games, suggestion is more powerful than just blatant, just outright saying something. And that's even carries over into horror movies. You know, if there's a horror movie and it builds a slow burn of dread the entire time, it's so much more effective than if it's just like, you know, some violent, gory, some shot in the middle of just a dreaded jump scare or something like that. And that's there's certainly, don't get me wrong, there's some gross, gory stuff in the book of Dan, but I wanted to go more for like this lingering, building, creepy factor throughout the entire thing. And the authors I got to work for it were more than up to that. I know you.
If I can add one thing, this is the first time that I've actually put a content disclaimer in my submission in the comments, going, this is really bad. If you feel uncomfortable with this, please tell me to rewrite it.
Yeah.
Because this is kind of pushing the limits of what I want to be associated with.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's
saying
something.
Yeah, so that came in, and I saw that, and I was like, yeah, he's right, but I'm going to see. So I put it through. And as it turns out, that was the one spot Eric Mona was like, oh, this is messed up. So I changed two or three words. And
I think I know exactly which part you're talking.
Yeah, we're talking, to be specific, we're talking about the Damon Harbinger Fulka.
Yeah.
Who is the Damon Harbinger of, he's the guy.
The last line, isn't it?
Yeah, he's the one that like walks up to the kids. He's wearing a long, dark trench coat and a hat, and he holds out a piece of candy, and he snatches them away, and he basically scares him to death or does terrible things to him. And that's a case where suggestion is so much more powerful, but it's also a case where it's like violence against children is such just a reprehensible thing that we don't want to do too much, you know, with that. So it's a case of like, rather than have, basically he sort of draws like on the Slenderman mythos that you see all over the internet, and like the boogeyman, the creature living under the bed. So he's kind of you know, the stranger danger guy, the monster that lives in your closet type thing. And those monsters, just by definition, once you know what the thing under your bed is, it's not as frightening. It's still maybe scary or gross, but it's not as overwhelming and nightmares. But of course, we got art for Volka. He's pretty cool looking. He's a big, tall guy. He's holding up like it looks like a red vine. He's got a big sack at his side, and his face is all long and narrow and blank, and you can see hands pushing on the inside, trying to get out from inside his face. Yeah, he's pretty nice. He's
a friend of mine. Seems like a good guy.
Yeah.
I'm really not comfortable writing this, but it makes sense.
So yeah, and there's other things in there too, like Sifkesh is a demon lord associated with suicide and heresy, and so there's we wanted to, on one level, present these powerful evil creatures, and we wanted them to be evil and creepy and scary, but we also wanted to be sensitive to what the topics was. We were writing a book about depravity, but we didn't want to be depraved doing it, is I guess what I'm trying to say. And that's a tricky line to walk. And I'm just incredibly grateful for we have a huge diverse cast of editors out there, either in-house with Chris Carey and Joe Pacini and Judy Bauer, but just elsewhere too. We got a bunch of freelancer editors like Liz Liddell and a whole bunch of the people just from all sorts of different angles went over this book and made sure that A, it was appropriate for us to be doing, and B, it was super creepy. So it was a tough needle to thread. Is that the thing?
I think so.
All right.
That sounds right.
Anyway, so let's take some questions that people have.
So, the first thing out of everything you guys have said, like, that really, really, really caught my ear was occult rituals to turn my players into fiends.
Mm-hmm.
My players, not me. Mm-hmm. How could I go about presenting such a ritual in a way where I would give the smart people a fair chance to figure out what this ritual's actually going to do?
Mm-hmm.
But then if they don't figure it out, well, shit, suddenly the fight is a devil.
So the rituals, the transformation ritual, first showed up in Pathfinder 1 in Burnt Offerings. And mm-hmm. that was a big plot point in that adventure where there was a character who was unsatisfied with her angelic ancestry because that had only brought her pain and suffering. She's like, I don't want to be an angel. Let's try being a demon. And started going through this transformation. She has one crazy... We got a new picture of her in Book of the Damned, like lording it over a bunch of goblins.
It's pretty rad. Yeah, it's gorgeous.
And so we've got her... Even back then, we didn't have rules for this transformation. So in the second Book of the Damned, I kind of quantified the steps, but there are still not really rules. With the occult rituals, we now have rules for like how these things are cast. So I was able to quantify these four stages of demon transformation. The way they work... it's pretty upfront. You're not going to accidentally do this ritual.
Oh, damn.
You can certainly, if you wanted to trick your players into doing that, and if you tricking your players is a very dangerous road to travel, because if you trick them and you annoy them, then they'll leave your game and then you don't have a game to play.
Mm-hmm.
So you got that's certainly a case where you want the consent of your players to base and trust.
Yeah.
But all of these rituals are things that are in the Book of the Damned. So if you see a ritual in the Book of the Damned, you should already know it's a bad ritual, because it's not the Book of the Helpful.
Book of the really nice guys.
The Book of the Favors.
Book of the Fluffy Buddies.
So it's a four-part ritual. The first one is basically just setting you up, and then the very last one goes even beyond what happened in Burnt Offerings and does a full transformation into a demon, bypassing the whole River of Souls element. So yeah, that's all in there. It's a case, I wouldn't necessarily trick the players in that, but it's stuff like summoning demons and capturing souls and stuff like that. The better way to do it is like, here is the situation, you could really risk everything and try to stop the bad guy by doing this, or you could take the somewhat easier route of summoning a demon to do it for you, but that might have even worse connotations down the road.
It's going to be great to see Wally again, even if it's only in the art.
Excellent, yeah.
You mentioned some of the quote-unquote lesser evil creatures like the Divs and the Asura. Is there stuff on the Asura? I forgot their names. It's the ones based on Indian mythology.
The Asura Ranas?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we've got a spread, basically, or two to four pages on these guys. So it's got like the whole table of like, here's their name, their domains, subdomains, fairy weapon, all that stuff is spilled out on the table. But then we've also got, depending upon the group, we've got either just one or two sentences that talks about them or a full paragraph. The Asuras are, I think, were a kind of a midline one because there's like 10 of those in there. So there's information about all of them. Not a lot, but enough for you to, as the GM, to run with it and to go more, and certainly it gives us a starting point if we wanted to explore them more in future.
Because one thing I found, and this is just, I think, guilty in the industry as a whole, is so much emphasis on things in Western mythology, and you bring in some great stuff from other mythologies, but they're never fleshed out.
Right. Well, with the demon lords, there's a lot of demon lords are just brought from all over different mythologies, so they're kind of spread out. But like the Horsemen of the Apocalypse are a pretty narrow focus, and the Archdevils certainly are. But yeah, we've got Oni Daimyos in there. We've got what else? Sakhil, which are kind of Central American. We've invented them all ourselves, but the flavor of them is a lot like what you would see with Kamazots or a lot of these creepy, evil demon god things that you would sacrifice people to. And so yeah, it's definitely got a lot more information there. With the new monsters, we've got a new Oni that is associated with the Nagaji race. We've got the new Asura is like this two-headed lion guy that has like tusks coming out the side of his face. And so there's some pretty cool stuff. It's pretty diverse all over the place. Yeah.
favorite previously obscure, newly fleshed out figure?
Oh, man. So, in my mind, a lot of them have always been fleshed out, so to a certain extent, it's kind of difficult for me to pick that out. I've certainly... We got a picture of Orcus in this book, and we've never illustrated Orcus before, and I'm pretty delighted with how he turned out, because that's a really tricky one, because Orcus is a huge character for Dungeons & Dragons, and he's a huge character for Frog God. The reason we can use him, of course, is because he's open content, thanks to the Complete Tome of Horrors. And I wanted to have Orcus be somebody that when you see him, you immediately say, oh, that's Orcus. But I didn't want you to say, that's Orcus from the cover of the Monster Manual, or that's Orcus from Frog God Games, or something like that. So, our version of Orcus, he's got actually not like a ram's head, he's got a ram's skull instead of a... It's all bony and everything like that. So that really, I think, not only sets him apart from the more classic versions of Orcus, but it double downs on the fact that he's like a demon lord of undeath and like. So I'm pretty delighted to see that come through. The thing that I'm the most delighted to finally have information about are the Chitin Demagogues. That's a category of fiend that I've been wanting to do something with for a long, long, long time. And and Wes was even more interested in doing that. And that's the section that I got him to add stuff to. And one of the challenges I told him is like, oh, we need a race name for these. We've been calling them Chitons all along, but that's always been sort of weird and confusing because Chiton is the name of one of them, not all of them. And so we've got a actual racial name for this group of creatures that we're going to reveal in the book today. I'm going to have to wait and see what that is. But it's pretty cool. Yeah. And so they'll still be calling, and we didn't abandon the whole idea of calling them all Chitons. There's an interesting method of why they call themselves Chitons. Like, it's sort of like the word chitin is like kind of this sound like you hear chains jangling around, and so it's like a personification of the jangling of chains and the clank of instruments as they're about to torture you.
Super creepy.
Yeah. On the Chitin Demigod, we've got illustrated, I forget which one it is, but she's basically this demagogue that has realized that everything but her face, which she uses to sing, is a distraction, so that's all she is. She's just this big face between these two spikes that is stretched out and pretty creepy.
It's messed up. I have a lot of favorite things. So as far as favorite figure, probably I'm really excited about what we've done with Iseth. So we have added flavor and lore and background to the Queens of the Night that didn't really exist previously. We had a little bit of information, right, in previous Book of the Damned, but it was just sort of like, oh, you know, she's the Aranese Queen, you know, Dolores is our Lady in Pain, you know, she sort of kind of looks like a chitin, but she's not. And, you know, for Ardead Lily and, you know, for the Queens of the Night in general. And we also updated their name, which was a thing that James and Wes and I had talked about. We wanted to get away from, you know, a problematic older name, which I think everybody here probably knows what it is. But so I got to add the flavor and the lore and the background to these characters who had really just sort of existed but hadn't... with the exception of Mahafala, right? I mean, we had stuff on Mahafala.
Yeah, we did do it that
before.
Big article.
So I didn't do that because we reprinted that stuff. But the other three, I really like the way they all turned out. But Iseth is really exciting because we sort of like seed some stuff in there about how she's perceived versus what her actual plans are. And she's this very... sort of like seething rage type of character. You know, she was one of the very earliest fallen angels. She wandered existence for 666 years after having committed a very heinous crime in heaven. She's, you know, she was an angel. She was trying to become an imperial lord, actually, and, you know, did this heinous act and fell very terribly and, you know, was going to be punished and sort of fled heaven. what happened after that is that she did this sort of wandering, you know, throughout creation and trying to figure out, you know, where did I go wrong? She didn't really understand what she had did wrong. It was a super evil act, and she, you know, her morality was sort of starting, had already become, you know, very on the gray and the dark side. And then she has this vision. She sees herself with these great black wings surveying this this land, and she finds it, and it's in hell. And that's sort of how she gets her realm, and we sort of explain a little bit about where that is and how the Erinys came to be. These are sort of her foot soldiers and her fighters, and we talk about what her plans for the future are, and it's really, I won't ruin what it is, but it's really exciting.
Yeah. How many people here were in the Pathfinder art preview? Anybody? So you saw some of the art in Book of Them. The art is incredible.
Yeah.
Oh, it's gorgeous. I have pictures of everything if anybody wants to.
There's the chapter openers in particular, I think, the art team just knocked out of the park. We've got an image. The first chapter opener is the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse apocalypsing a village, which we've never seen them do before, riding their horses. So I was delighted. Their horsemen actually being horses.
That's cool.
Second chapter opening is the one with Nualia and the goblins. That's like a hellscape type thing. I don't know who showed that one up. The third one is Nualia and their goblins. The fourth one is a portal to hell opening up in the sky over a village. So the art is phenomenal. I'm just love the fact that we've been able to get illustrations for every one of these major fiendish demigods. Some of the art is reprints, but we've tried to not reprint any art we've already done in hardcovers. So with Bestiary 6 and Bestiary 4, you know, we put a lot of these fellas and ladies into books as with stats. All of those characters got new art. So, it's pretty cool. Beelzebub's art is like you're standing like at his feet, and he's 600 feet tall, looking up at him. And it's pretty cool. Any more questions? Yeah.
You mentioned Bestiary 6 and where you went out, and we have all the archdevils, we have a good number of Kulbith lords and demon lords, and we have the Four Horsemen. Mm-hmm. I assume those stat blocks are not going to be reproduced.
The Book of the Damned has never been about fighting these guys. It's always been about worshiping them or dealing with their minions. All those stats are already in Bestiaries. We've got all of the all the archdevils done. We've got all the horsemen. Is that what we call them?
Horse people.
Horsies. We got them all done. We've got a fair number of demon lords done between Bestiary 4 and Wrath of the Righteous has another 6 of them.
Right.
Klepoth lords, like you said, we've got all of them except Sugareb, who is a Klepoth lord from the book the Book of Fiends. So if you need her stats, you can just sort of already have those in the Book of Fiends from Grim Running. I love statting up crazy powerful stat blocks like that, and I know not everybody really enjoys them, but to sidetrack a little bit into Bestiary 6 territory, I think there's three things that a big stat block like that can do. First of all, it's just, you know, fun to read as a GM, to like read these things. I still have fond memories of picking up the monster manual, flipping through it, seeing Demogorgon at 200 hit points, and Asmodeus had 199. And that is basically why I like demons better than devils, because Demogorgon had one more hit point than the boss. plus Demogorgon, all of the devils were like, I'm a dude with a goatee and maybe a hoof.
It's
like, try harder. I mean, on the demon side, you've got like there's a big fat ram-headed guy or a two-headed dinosaur tail thing or a slime ball or all these other, they're just more interesting. Anyway, so that's one thing. The other thing is that if they have stats, you can kill them, and that gives, you know, a great, super powerful end boss for a campaign that either can ruin your player characters, or if your player characters defeat them, that's like bragging rights. That's like a huge, that's something you'll remember forever. So remember the campaign where we killed Orcus? The third of all is that it gives sort of a scale of power, so that you can see how powerful things can get, and you can like have them fight each other, or they can become tools. Like, you can call any of these things with a gate spell if they agree. So like if you want Orcus to come help you out, or let's go, Pazuzu, he's friendly. If you want Pazuzu to come help you out, you can cast Gate as a, you know, 17th level wizard and ask Pazuzu to come in here to, you know, open this door that's stuck. And he probably will show up. And when he does, you know, you need stats for when invariably, you know, you need to know what his strength is so he can push down that door, because that's what Pazuzu is really good at. any more questions? Yeah.
Are there going to be any, like, maps or anything that show kind of where the territories are broken up into for all these different lords?
There are two maps in the adventure, or in the book. There's one in the back section that has all of the in-character excerpts, and it's a map of the center core of Dis, which is a reprinted map from the previous book. There's also, we picked up the section from, I think it's Hell Unleashed,
mm-hmm.
where there's a demiplane inside of the Book of the Damned.
Yeah.
And so you can go into the Book of the Damned and research, you know, all these topics in there and maybe run afoul of the Keeper of the word of the book or whatever, this crazy page-made monster thing. And so there's a map of that region there. Then we don't really have... it wasn't really about mapping out entire planar realms. That's a kind of a tricky thing, even in and of itself, because these are realms that can be as big as they can be as small as like a single island or two, but there's no upper limit really. They could be as large as like an entire solar system in size, and so mapping them out is really tricky. And so we haven't done that. That would people be interested in seeing something that like gives maps more information, like the lower planes and the outer planes?
Yes.
And all that stuff?
Yes. Oh yes.
All right.
All right. So let me just take a note. So, that's something that could very well make its own book, and that's something that we want to do, and we know people want to see it. So, we'll see what happens. More questions?
You were just saying about, you know, that could be its own book.
Uh-huh.
So the chapter on, like, you know, hell and the abyss and stuff, that wouldn't preclude some sort of a planes of power style book, but for the lower planes or something?
No, absolutely not. Right now, what we've got in the book for hell, the abyss, and we've got, it's about maybe 10 pages. And if you've seen what we've done already in the soft cover books of the Damned, there's like a section for the archdevils that each one of those archdevils has a page about the archdevil and a page about the archdevil's realm. And that information is basically what we're reprinting in this book. Again, this book is primarily a compilation. It's not, it's mostly like maybe one third of it is reprint, like on par with Rise of the Rune Lords or Curse of the Crimson Throne.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of information that is gathered up from multiple sources. But there's 9 layers of hell, and each layer of hell is immense. And so we only had, I think, 6 or 8 pages to cover all of that stuff. So it's really kind of a whirlwind tour of all this stuff. Same goes for the Abyss. The Abyss, we've got 32 or some realms, and there's infinite number more beyond that. Abaddon's a weird case because it's only one Abaddon, but that just means we get to get a little bit more detail about the places inside Abaddon. I did actually finally get to get a little bit more information about Urgothoa's realm in there, which is, I'm finally delighted for, because Urgothoa is one of the deities from my homebrew setting.
Nice.
And in that setting, she lives on the planet, on a tower atop the tallest mountain on the planet, where there's no oxygen because she's undead and all of her minions are undead. So if you go up there to visit her, you will die before you even get there, and then maybe turn undead and never leave. So so that tower is now inside of Abaddon. So there's a lot of information about those realms, but it's just scratching the surface. And if we were to do sort of like a Planes of Evil or something like that book, something along the lines of Planes of Power, the amount of information we were able to do on just those 4 planes is much more in-depth and intense. So it's, yeah, definitely a stepping stone type thing.
Good.
Go back
there real quick. Is there going to be any more information on the first daemon, or is he still going to be left in the shadows?
We reprinted the information about the first daemon that we already did in the book. She's grinning like this.
Buy me drinks, I'll tell you about my home game, but it's not canon.
not canon yet. So there's not much more. That's something that we really, the power of that is so, is another case where it's so creepy and evocative. The less you know, the more powerful it is. And for the moment, we really want to focus on the horsemen themselves. He's the Onodaemon is basically what you're talking about, the very first daemon. And that is kind of in the same category as like Orcus and Jubilance, who are also in the book. But they're characters that were created basically by TSR back in the day and have been gone forward into Wizards of the Coast. And we can use them because they are in the OGL through Frog God, Necromancer Games is booked. And I'm a huge fan of all those characters. I have been for decades. But I'm also, there's already a lot of information about them out there that we can't really touch because that flavor text isn't ours to play with. So I kind of don't want to overwrite that so that the DMs can pull in whatever they want from them and then focus on newer things that we've come up with. So maybe someday that philosophy will change, but for now I'm more interested in what's going on. If we do something like a Horseman of the Apocalypse adventure path, maybe we'll do more. I don't know how we do that.
Horseman of the...
Okay, of course it's a natural question to ask. Is there any ideas on the radar at all about potentially Book of the Neutral Aligned Raid, Outer Races, or the Imperial Lords?
We've done Chronicle of the Righteous, of course.
Right.
And that was hugely popular. Amber Scott, our guest of honor, wrote the whole thing, and she knocked it out of the park. There is the what do we call it? The Chronicle of the blah, 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 blah. There is a neutral version of the Book of the Damned, because Tabris, the author of the Book of the Damned, wrote one for all of the planes, and his job was to basically catalog all of reality for heaven.
It's concordance of something.
The concordance of it's not balance, is it? Concordance
so.
Of anyway. So that does potentially exist. We were able to do the Book of the Damned because we'd already written 3/4 of it. In the case of Chronicle of the Righteous, that's not as big a book already because it's so more compact. A hardcover version of it is not really likely, but a softcover version of the neutral book is certainly something that we've been
considering. Because it would be nice to see some of the higher up inevitables or proteans.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's a place with proteans.
See some protean lords.
No, those guys all fell down the bathtub. They broke their necks. So definitely something that explores the neutral side of things is something we've not really done much at all.
Erasmus Court.
As side of Erasmus Court with the Psychopomps. It would basically be the Boneyard, the Maelstrom, and Axis, which are three planes that are unique to Galarian. So that in and of itself is really compelling to me to explore. Proteans, of course, are something that we've come up with a little bit of help from Todd. of course, the Psychopomps are things that we've come up with all our own. Honestly, one of the tricky parts for me is that inevitables are not something we've come up with. And I've naturally been really hesitant about doing much more work with inevitables just because that is a concept that TSR came up with and Wizards of the Coast came up with. They're all in the open content. They're all open. But
more types of axiomites?
We could expand on axiomites, but I really like axiomites being their own race, kind of in the same way we've got Dorvay. Dorvay! That's another thing. We've got like a half a page about Dorvay in Book of the Damned, which is the forgotten fiend race, because they're just one race. They don't identify with any other type of outsider.
The tentacle dudes.
Yeah, the tentacle-legged hooded freakers. So one of the things that has in my head been kind of hampering the neutral book is what do we do with the lawful neutral stuff, and I want there to be a lot of axiomite stuff in there. I don't want the axiomites to become their own race because I think that's more interesting than just them as themselves. Or we could just do some inevitable stuff and just bite the bullet like we've done with Chitons. It's kind of the same thing with Chitons, Wizards of the Coast created Chitons, but then we've done so much more work expanding upon that. We put them into the Shadow Plane. We've got all of these different types of creatures. We've got them tied to Zonkathon. So we've in a lot of ways, Paizo's done more work to build out Chitons than Wizards of the Coast. So it's this weird sort of symbiotic relationship.
Yeah, I'm sorry to make those were taken from Clive Barker.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's true as well, but Zonkathon predates the Chitons. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's a character from my homebrew. So it's a case of everything is so you know, weirdly building off of like Clive Barker and Wizards of the Coast and all that stuff, that it's I'm more proud of the stuff that we've come up with on our own, is I guess what I'm saying. So, but people, I know people want to see a neutral book, so that is something that we're going to hopefully someday do, but we'll see. There was a question somewhere else?
There's a question.
Oh. This is absolutely 100% off topic of the panel.
Uh-oh. Won't necessarily answer, but you can ask it.
Okay. On the interview that you did a couple of months back with No Direction Podcast, yep. you discussed briefly the possibility of another AP getting a remaster. Mm-hmm. Any news, announcements, anything about that?
No.
Okay.
This came up actually on another panel. There's a bunch of things that make us decide to do an AP hardcover compilation. One of them, of course, that we've talked about a lot is that if the current volumes are sold out and you can't really buy them anymore, that's really compelling to us. Another one is, do we actually have the time mm-hmm. to create that product? And now that we've got two games going at once, it's going to be really tricky. We're still figuring yeah. out Starfinder and Pathfinder are sharing the load and all that.
Yeah.
And another one is somebody on staff eager to do it? Mm-hmm. And kind of all three of those things have to kind of laser focus on the same spot. So like personally, I would love to do a compilation of Second Darkness, but we don't really have the time or bandwidth to do something like that. And we are not very close at all to selling out a Second Darkness. We've got a lot of those in stock. It's a kind of a double-edged sword there. You know, it's the one I think could benefit the most from a really, really big remastering, but it's not one of the most popular ones. Mm-hmm. So that's the fourth category. Is this an adventure path that we know people are like and want to see more of? So, mm-hmm. they take a lot of time to do. So we just did Curse of the Crimson Throne, last year?
Mm-hmm.
So I would not expect anything along the lines of another adventure path remaster for at least another several years. So
yeah.
And by that point, we'll have done 6-8 more adventure paths themselves, so maybe one of them gets it, who knows.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that I think might be more likely to happen is a bigger adventure. I want to do like a big like we did with Emerald Spire or something like that. So
how
about
will there be anything about Clip-Offs?
Yes. I can't believe I haven't talked about Clip-Offs.
I think you mentioned that maybe once.
We got a new Clip-Off in here. We've got a spread for all of the Clip-Off lords. Clip-Offs are also in Bestiary 6, so you've got all of their stats in there. We've got a expanded... For the Abyss, we've got kind of a gazetteer of the known layers of the Abyss that's basically been picked up from the Midnight Isles back in Wrath of the Righteous, where we get a paragraph for every realm that we mentioned. But then we go into bigger detail on Carnugia, which is Lamashu's realm, and High Mavania, which is Pazuzu's realm, and the Midnight Isles, which is Noxticula's realm, and Gyadiagnoth, which is the realm of the Clip-Off. So, or the top layer that, you know, it's like if the Clip-Off lived inside a wound, Gyadiagnoth is like the scab that he just picked open.
In the realm where the, I can never pronounce his name.
The Azabas?
Yeah. The fungus.
Yeah.
Sith-Bazug,
yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, there's going to be a lot more about Sith-Bazug coming up very, very soon.
Yeah, Sith-Bazug gets a full-on deity article in the penultimate The Adventure You Wrote mm-hmm. for Iron Fang Invasion.
Yep. Iron Fang number 5, which is out next month.
Yeah, so check that out. There's...
Well, that's right, the fungus involved.
Did any of the Harbingers get art?
Oh.
Yes, two of them.
Cool.
Fulka got art. Because that's a big section, and I originally was like, well, we got it's gonna be 4 pages, so I'll get two illustrations. Whoever it was that wrote about the Harbingers wrote a lot of information that was hard to tear down, so I had to move one of those illustrations into Abaddon, which had actually run a little short. And you probably remember her name. I don't off the top of my head. It starts with a V.
Varasha,
yeah.
Sweet.
Who is basically the second. He's probably the most powerful Harbinger.
Yeah.
So that's kind of my take there is if I'm illustrating only one of a group, I will want to illustrate either the most powerful one, which is Varasha, who's this kind of poison breath, snake necked, jackal lady thing. And
Medusa.
Yeah. or the creepiest one, which is, of course, Spolka. We've got time for a couple more questions if they're lightning round type fast questions. Or any question, any topic. I'll answer anything. Huh. Guess not.
Maybe one more back there. Yeah.
Okay, any larger, you know, cosmological information? Because I remember in the softcover books of the damned, like comparing the demon and the devil one, it was kind of inconsistent as to which came first.
That information is still kept inconsistent in the back section where it's like the in-world stuff. And that's intentional because they're evil. They're all liars, even the lawful ones. So we kind of want to make it sort of this weird sort of...
I was first. No,
yeah.
I was first.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That is, I think, a strength of the mystery of it. And once we say exactly how something happened, which one is first and all of that, it does take away a lot of mystery. That said... I have like a Moleskine notebook at the office, and it's filled with all sorts of just crazy person writings. And I've got something that I wanted at one point to put in a Strange Eons, which is basically a rune or just diagram of the first nine deities to exist. And so that didn't make it into Strange Eons because that went over to Adam and he took it in his own direction. So I'm kind of sitting on that, waiting for the right place to sneak that into something. So I do know who the oldest deities are, and it's not in print yet, and I still have to, even though I'm the creative director, I have to make sure that everybody else is cool with it before we publish it. So that is in there, and there is some truth to what we put in Book of the Damned, but it's not all true.
It's mostly BS.
Yeah.
Also completely off topic, obviously, Eric is going to be the best person to ask, but do you know if there's an approximate timeline for the Occult Iconics, like a miniature box?
There is a possible timeline.
Okay.
And that a timeline can exist for it. I don't have really anything to do with the... My interaction with the miniatures is kind of like helping Eric pick out which ones they are, approving the sculpts, but... the actual timeline and all of that is more Eric or Mike Kenway. If you want us to do something like that, let us know either here at the convention or on the board or something like that.
How about this? Please, I beg you.
Mm-hmm. You can beg me all you
That's
want.
That's worked in the past when I've used that direction.
It works better if what you're begging for is something that I particularly want to. So.
you're saying that you don't want to see a Yoon Mini?
Hmm. Not a big fan of the kineticist. It's a little bit too complicated for me. I'm sort of maybe in 10 years when we've got something new, and I'm like, oh, I miss the kineticist. So that said, the fact that we do have a young iconic, I think, is super super rad.
Mm-hmm. The shifter looks pretty young too.
Yeah, no, the shifter's a Shoenti, same age as the others. She's somewhere halfway between Yoon and Ezrin.
Okay.
but the small minis are always kind of tricky anyway because there's less room to get paint on there and all of that. So I think we could do probably a pretty cool Yoon though with like the clear plastics and have her just have spirals going around and all of that.
Definitely.
Hmm. All right, now I'm starting to warm up to that idea. Ha! Good idea.
Yes.
All right. Oh, I've got another one.
This is totally off topic.
That's fine.
Can you guys do a spell compendium at some point?
Yeah, we could.
4,000, 5,000, 6,000 pages?
The weird thing about a spell compendium is we publish new books every month, and if we publish a spell compendium, it'll be accurate for 30 days, and then presto, we'll print something in a player companion or somewhere, and then all of a sudden that spell companion is now out of date.
Yeah.
And that frustrates my inner, you know, OCD gamerness. And so it's something, but and at the same point, it's like we could compile, we did that with Ultimate Equipment, for example.
Yeah.
We could do an Ultimate Spellbook type thing, but whether or not we do, who knows. Looks like
we're
getting
time.
Kicked out.
Yeah.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us for another edition of the No Direction Podcast PaizoCon 2017 seminar coverage, made possible with the help of Justin Sluder and Ryan Hiller of Geek Dad. To find more great Pathfinder audio, go to NoDirectionPodcast.com.